to see clearly through all the smoke and flashes of magic, but she saw King Haradul's cavalry reaching the gate, loading their muskets and firing at the men at the top of the wall, but seeming to wait for something, frustrated it hadn't happened yet. Lord Omnichrome's musket roared, and an instant later there was a small bright flash at the top of the gate tower. Liv was glad she hadn't seen all of it.
"Dead center, Lord Omnichrome," the attendant announced. "Excellent shot."
"Begun. Leave us."
The top of the hill cleared quickly of everyone save the musket attendant, whom Lord Omnichrome gestured to stay. Lord Omnichrome turned toward Liv. He wasn't smiling.
"I don't like killing drafters. I hate it," he said. "What I do here is what must be done. I want you to join me, Oliviana."
"Why? Why me? I'm barely a bichrome, not that powerful, no influence," he snorted.
"Are you ready for the answer to that question? You want to be an adult, Oliviana? You want hard truths? Because that's the only kind I've known for the past 16 years.
"I'm ready," she said.
"I want you because you're a drafter, and every drafter is precious to me. And because you're Tyrian, and this country will take a lot of reassuring after we win, and I'm not Tyrian. And because you're Corvin Danavis's daughter."
"I knew it," she spat.
"Listen, you half-wit. Listen or you're unworthy of the role I have for you anyway."
That shut her up.
"As Corvin's daughter, I some hope that you're half as intelligent as he is. If so, you'll be a formidable ally. I need bright leaders, but I won't lie to you. I hope that your coming to our side might free your father from the Chromeria's grip. I suspect that he only serves the prison because they held you hostage. If that's true, Corvin might come over to us, and having a general of his standing on our side might prevent any further war from even being necessary. That's how much fear your father inspires. Men won't even take the field against him. During the Prism's war, his enemies would use spyglasses to see which general was directing a battle. If it was your father, they would retreat and fight another day. That's how good your father is, and I'd be a fool to ignore him when he might fight for me. If you think that's me manipulating you, you're right. I'll use you. You're important. The Chromeria will use you too. Already has. Grow up and realize it. I'll be honest about it, that's all. And my honesty gives you a choice. That's better than they'll give you."
His eyes were threaded with red and orange like flames. He was right, it was true. And if that was true, what if all of it was true? "King Haradul slaughtered my whole town."
"Yes, he even took some of my drafters and made them help him."
Liv had expected him to deny it, excuse it.
"And yet you'd have me serve him."
Lord Omnichrome lowered his voice.
"Kings don't live forever, especially reckless ones."
A huge explosion rocked the wall to the left of the gatehouse. It was powerful enough that it threw many of the combatants off their feet, and more than a few people off the wall itself, but as the smoke gradually cleared, to Liv it seemed that the charge must have been planted on the other side of the wall. The damage that she could see there was much more extensive, rows of houses simply obliterated. A cheer went up among the cavalry, though, as the clearing smoke showed a gap, blasted in the wall itself.
"You see, the people of Garristan are working with us. They want to be free."
But Liv barely heard him. She'd just seen something through the mists on the battlefield that took her breath away. Kip. And not just Kip. Kip and Karis both were riding into the fray. For a moment, Liv didn't understand. Kip and Karis had switched sides. They were fighting to free Garristan. Then her eyes followed the path they were taking. The path led straight to King Haradul. King Haradul, who Kip hated for wiping out their town and killing his mother. And they were being pursued by half a dozen mounted mirror men. "How much am I worth to you?" Liv said.
"I've already told you."
"Then I'm yours. On one condition." The red swirled out of his eyes, replaced by orange and blue. "Save my friends. Him and her. The ones those mirror men are after." She pointed. Lord Omnichrome beckoned his attendant sharply, and the man came running with his long musket.
"You wish me to kill several allies in order to gain one,"
Lord Omnichrome said.
"You barter lives like—"
"Like an adult," Liv said sharply.
"And a formidable one indeed. But I'm not in the business of buying loyalty. I'll do my best to save your friends, as a gift, regardless of what you decide.
He sighted down his musket and fired. A Miniman riding toward Karis died in a flash of light and blood. Lord Omnichrome handed the musket off to be reloaded.
So take that out of your calculations, Liv. But tell me now, whom will you serve, me or the Chromaria?
Fealty to one. And to one only. There was no good choice. There were no good guys. Trying to do the right thing had led Liv to spying on her greatest benefactor. The Chromaria corrupted even people's love for each other. Everyone she knew said Lord Omnichrome was a monster, but everyone she knew had been corrupted by the Chromaria. So maybe Lord Omnichrome wasn't perfect. Neither was Gavin. The only people innocent here were the people of Tyria. They deserved to be free. If Liv had to fight, she wasn't going to fight for their oppressors. Fealty to one? A Danavis had to choose whom she would serve? So be it. Taking a deep breath, Liv gave a full Tyrian formal curtsy.
Lord Omnichrome, she said,
her voice even, her eyes meeting his.
I'm yours. How may I serve?
Chapter 85
Traitors, Kip heard a woman say.
His head snapped toward Karis. She spat on the dead Miramen, imperious, masterful.
What is she doing?
Karis grabbed a musket and powder horn and began reloading it, as if she were a simple soldier. When Kip saw the looks on the faces of the soldiers near them, he finally understood. They'd just seen her and Kip fight Miramen. But none of the surrounding men knew who was fighting on which side or if they should interfere. It looked like these soldiers had lost all of their officers, not surprising, since the defenders on the wall would try to kill officers first. That was probably the only reason Kip and Karis were still alive.
Well, drafter, she said,
finishing her reloading. She was as fast at that as she was at everything. Her skin was the color of blood. Her eyes were no longer capped with the violet eye caps that kept her from drafting. Wait, had he done that? He was feeling shaky, drained. Her bluff had worked, though. The soldiers were turning back to the fighting, determined not to get in the way of this virago. She was talking to him. That's right, genius. Seeing how you're the one who just drafted two huge spikes and impaled a couple of mirror men. Which made Kip look toward the men he'd killed. Mistake. One had a frothy gore hole in his chest the size of Kip's fist. The other's head was torn in pieces, chunks of white bone mixed amid red in a picture that refused to coalesce into a face.
Kip, ordinarily this is a bad idea when you're as new as you are, but I want you to draft more green. I need you with me,
Karis hissed. He was staring at the smear of head on the ground. The soldiers pushing toward the gate were trampling right over the pieces of brain and bone, giving more room to the two drafters than they did to the men Kip had killed.
Kip!
She slapped him hard.
Cry later! Be a man now!
The red diamonds in her emerald eyes blazed. She cursed, cast about for a moment, looking for something. Then a few threads of green wove their way from her eyes to her fingertips through the ocean of red that colored her pale skin, and she drafted something small in her hands. Spectacles. Spectacles entirely of green luxin. She put them on his face, adjusted them, did something to seal them, and then stepped away.
Now draft, she ordered.
Kip was a sponge. It was like going outside on a hot day, closing his eyes and basking in the heat. Everywhere he looked, there were light-colored surfaces, homes and shops, whitewashed against the sun, and every one of them gave him magic. He soaked it in, feeling potent, free. The throbbing in his burned hand faded to nothing. He joined the stream of soldiers heading toward the gap in the wall. The musket fire from atop the wall had all but ceased. It was turning into a glorious morning. Bright, crisp, slowly burning off the mist. It would be hot soon. Where before, when he was unmoving, the stream of men had parted around him like a boulder as they saw that he was a drafter. As soon as he joined the stream, he was jostled about just like everyone else. The lines compressed the closer they got to the wall, and men trying to stay with their units pushed hard. As it got tighter and tighter, more and more constrained, Kip started to rebel against it. He wasn't sure how much of the agitation was his and how much was the Green Luxin's influence on him, but he could tell that there was more to his reaction than his own psyche. with a confluence of horses and men in armour, though only a small fraction of King Haradul's army was armoured or uniformed, those soldiers were intent on going in first. Kip lost sight of King Haradul himself. Caris had slipped into the line in front of him, and she was using her slender form and muscles to slip in between rows and push forward. Kip soon lost sight of her, too. It was all he could do to keep on his feet, as the crowd packed tight together right at the wall.
"You!"
someone shouted. Kip looked. A horseman 10 paces away was staring at Kip. Kip had no idea who the man was.
"You!"
the officer repeated.
"You're not one of us!"
At first, Kip had no idea who the man was. He thought maybe it was one of the soldiers who'd escorted him with Zymon after Kip had blown up the fire, but even that was only a guess. Unfortunately, it didn't matter. The man recognized him. The officer tugged at his musket, trying to pull it from the saddle sleeve, but there were other horses pressing in on either side of him, and it was stuck.
"Spy! Traitor!"
the officer shouted, pointing at Kip. "He doesn't have the sleeves! He's not one of us! Murderer! Spy! That green drafter is a spy!" Kip had been pushed up the rubble pile to the gap in the wall itself. It put him at a high point. Everyone was able to see him. The officer finally pulled his musket free and kicked his horse savagely to come after Kip. Turned backward, looking at the man, not really believing he would fire into a crowd of his compatriots, Kip lifted his hands to draft something. Anything. His foot slid on the rubble, and the surging crowd, some pulling away, some reaching toward him, threw him off balance. He went down in stages. The people were packed so tight that he didn't fall all at once, but neither could he stop himself once he started. The gap in the wall vomited them into garrison. Kip fell and rolled. Someone stepped on his burned left hand. He screamed. Feet were hitting his sides. Someone tripped over him. Someone stepped on his belly. Someone kicked the side of his head. He tumbled, rolling down the slight hill of rubble, tried to gain his feet, and got smacked with the stock of a musket. He ended up on his back, head ringing, left hand on fire with pain, eyes having trouble focusing. Without meaning to, he'd gone turtle again, as he had when Mistress Hallel had tried to kill him, and again, he was about as effective as a turtle on its back. It was like the world knew Kip needed to take the coward's way, and it conspired together to land him here. The next thing he knew, there were people on every side of him, kicking, kicking. Some were trying to slam musket butts down on him, but there were so many people packed in so tightly around him that he only felt a few glancing blows on his legs. Back in the old days, he would have rolled over on his stomach and buried his head in his hands, rolled into a ball and waited until Ram had asserted his superiority again and tired of the game and left him. Doing that here would be death. "Do you expect me to take a whipping lying down?" "Yes, Kip. It's your way." "You expect me to die lying down?" "Face it, Kip. You're not much of a fighter. Not when it matters. Why don't you curl up in a ball and quit?" Part of him expected Caris to save him. She was a fighter, a warrior, a drafter. She was quick and decisive, nimble and deadly with magic or blade. The crowd was like a beast, a seething, teeming, roaring mass that had lost all individuality, and Kip hated it. He ducked his head as someone tried to stomp on him. He saw leering faces, brief images of snarling mouths, visages twisted with hatred. Part of him expected Iron Fist to save him. The man had swept in out of nowhere twice before and done that. Iron Fist was huge, strong, intimidating. He was as quiet and as unmoving as steel, a guardian. Part of him expected Liv to save him. Why not? She'd come in at the last minute to save him from the assassin, Mistress Hallel. Part of him expected Gavin to save him. What good was a prism if he couldn't save his own bastard? Gavin was here, somewhere. He had to be close. He had to know the wall had been breached. He had to be hurrying here, even now. A kick caught Kip in the kidney, sending lances of pain through his whole body. As he lurched, a fist caught him in the face, his head bounced off the stones, blood shot out of his nose, drenching his mouth and chin. No one was coming. Like when his mother had locked him in a cupboard when he was 8 years old, because he'd complained, or talked too much, or he didn't even remember what he'd done wrong. He just remembered the look of disgust on her face. She despised him. She threw his soup at him and locked the door and went out to get high, and forgot about him. because he was worthless. After a day, the rats had come. He woke to one licking the dried soup off his neck. Its little claws dug into his chest, its weight terrifyingly heavy. He'd screamed, jumped to his feet, thrashed, screamed, and screamed, and no one heard. That rat ran away, but soon, in the darkness, more had come. They dropped into his hair, bit his bare toes, scrambled up his pant legs. They were everywhere, dozens of them, hundreds for all he knew. He'd screamed until his throat was raw, thrashed and hit at them until his hands were bleeding, twisted his ankle on some old boxes crammed into the cupboard, and no one had come. His mother had found him on the morning of the third day, curled in a ball, head tucked in his arms, whimpering, dehydrated, long bloody wounds all over his head, shoulders, back, and legs, not even trying to dislodge the rats covering him like a cloak. There were a dozen dead rats with him, and more live ones. She'd given him water, eyes haze glazed, begrudgingly cleaned his wounds with the last of her harsh lemon liquor, and then wandered out to find more haze. All without a word. She seemed to have forgotten it all when he next saw her. He still had scars on his shoulders, back, and butt, where the rats had bit him. "No one's coming, Kip." Another kick. "You always were a disappointment." Another kick. "A failure." Kick. "You're not good at anything." Kick.
"Enough! Enough!"
someone shouted. The officer finally pushed through the crowd carrying his musket.
"Move back!"
he shouted. He hefted the musket, pointing it at Kip's head. "What can I do? Draft little green balls?" "Fine." Kip drafted a green ball and threw it up into the yawning barrel, willed it to stay. The officer pulled the trigger. A moment, then the musket exploded in his hands. The breech of the musket blew out, throwing flaming black powder into the man's face, setting his beard alight. He screamed, fell back.
"Kill him!"
someone shouted. Kip saw steel being drawn on all sides, flashes of the sun on blades, and he started laughing. Because he was good at something. He was good at taking punishment. He was a turtle. Or maybe a bear. A turtle bear. Or Hollum, he was an idiot. He laughed again, slapping his hands to his shoulders as he lay on the ground. Green Luxin jetted out, covering him like he'd seen it cover the green-white back in Recton. As Kip watched, a sword descended and hacked into the green Luxin over his arm. It cut in two fingers' breadths, but the Luxin was thicker. It stopped, quivering like an axe in wood. Kip flipped over, pulling in more green from every light surface, not even knowing how he did it, pulling and pulling, drafting light from Orholm's endless tap. It filled him with that same wildness. Wildness chained, hemmed in, trapped. The Luxin covering him grew thicker. Kip gathered his feet beneath himself and stood, roaring. He was crazy. He was crazy and he felt great. He smashed a green forearm into a wide-eyed man holding a sword. It flung the man back. Kip paused for a second and spikes sprouted from his green armor everywhere. He threw his weight back and forth, crashing into the crowd like they were rats to smash against cupboard walls. Blood was flying in red ropes. Kip wasn't human anymore. He was an animal, unwilling to be caged. He was a mad dog. Some dim, thinking part of him thought that he shouldn't have been able to move so well with such a heavy suit on him. He was strong, but not this strong. He had no sense of the battle beyond the little circle around him. Even that was a blur, sharp motions to the left and right, gleams of light off blades and rising muskets to be crushed before they could fire. He slashed and hacked and pounded with unreasoning fury. He could hold only one thought: I will not be stopped. In moments, or hours, Kip had no notion of time, he saw fear in every eye. A continual flood of men spilled in through the gap, thrust forth hard by the mass of bodies behind them, all pushing them forward and into Kip. But his very presence was slowing the flood, men pushing back as soon as they saw him, others leaping to the sides, hoping to avoid his fury. Their weakness inflamed him further. Like rats, willing to bite in the darkness but scattering in the light, they were cowards. He clubbed them, smashing heads, ripping open bellies. He charged the gap where they couldn't flee, impaled them, flung gore left and right. A thought won through his brain. Among all the shouting and screams and fear and mist and musket fire and clash of arms, someone was screaming a word.
"Kip! Kip! King Haradul! That way!"
Kip couldn't see who was shouting. He stretched, found himself taller, the Luxin swirling under his feet, boosting him several hands' breadths. Looking into the city, he saw Karis, skin red and green, entwined, holding a sword, pointing it deeper into the city still. King Haradul was rallying his mirrormen around him there, pulling them together after they'd been separated, coming through the gap. He was screaming orders. Seemed furious about something. Hadn't seen Kip. Before he even knew what he was doing, Kip was charging. All his will, focused, intent, implacable. This one thing remained. King Haradul had to pay for what he'd done. He had to die.
Chapter 86.
When Gavin heard the explosion, he knew immediately what it was. He was almost back to the wall on his way from the docks, where he'd been using the first light to help draft boats for the refugees. The evacuation was entirely possible if people would be reasonable. Gavin had told the city's elders that nobles could bring 3 chests, armourers and apothecaries could bring 3 as well, rich merchants could bring 2, and everyone else could only bring what they could carry. It was a simple rationale, if a hard one. The fleeing Tyrians would need medicine, and they didn't want to leave any arms that King Haradul could use to arm his troops and spread his aggression, and though it stuck in Gavin's throat to help the rich more than the poor, the rich would bring their riches out of the city. Those riches, if left, would again be used by King Haradul and would help him kill others. If people did everything according to orders, there would still be room for everyone to escape who wanted to. Except, of course, everyone cheated. Everyone. Nobles brought 6 chests. Rich merchants brought 5. Others lied and claimed to be armourers or apothecaries who were not. Gavin put a local guild head in charge, went to draft on the barges, and when he came back found the men letting his own guild members bring extra baggage. Gavin drafted a scaffold off the side of the pier in 5 seconds and had the man strangling on it in 10. He put someone else in charge before the first man was dead. "Make decisions fast and as justly as you can," Gavin told the deeply frowning, pock-marked Cooper he was putting in charge. "And my whole authority is behind you, even if you make mistakes. Take 1 bribe, and I'll take my time making your death as much worse than this as I can imagine." Then he left. He didn't have time for this. He was at the base of the wall when he heard the explosion. It was exactly what he'd been afraid of. It had been why he'd drafted Brightwater Wall in the first place. With all the homes and shops built directly against the city wall, it was hard to defend from enemies outside, but impossible to defend from enemies within. Anyone who owned a shop could be given barrels of black powder, tunnel under the wall a little bit, and set a charge. They could work in full privacy, uninterrupted, could and had. Blackguards in tow, Gavin dug his heels into his horse's flanks, but he didn't head for the gap. A hole in the wall was a prize, of course, but it would immediately attract defenders, and it might not be big enough for the army to come through. It might become a choke point, a killing zone. Better to use the distraction of a breach in the walls to open a gate elsewhere. Gavin dispatched messengers to the Hag's Gate and the Lover's Gate and headed toward the Mother's Gate. At the top of the wall he ran into General Corvin Danavis with his entourage. Doubtless Corvin was going to direct the defense of the breach in the wall personally. Corvin paused only to say,
"They're holding back their drafters and colour whites. I don't know why, but if we lose a gate in the next 20 minutes, we won't make it until noon."
That was Corvin, condensing the information to the absolutely vital. "If it falls," Gavin said, "be at the ships an hour before noon." Corvin nodded his head. No fighting to the death. Gavin clapped Corvin's shoulder, then the general was gone. At the top of the gate, Gavin looked over the teeming mass on the other side. Hardly anyone was firing at the invaders from the wall anymore, but the army pushed forward like a blind beast, black fingertips reaching up to grab the wall. Many of the homes outside the wall had been demolished in just a few hours, but of those that remained, the army had found which places were easiest to scale. At 6 places, a slow trickle of men were clambering up onto the wall itself and engaging the few defenders. Farther out, King Haradul's men were setting up their mortars. Too late, really. There was no point in them bombarding the city at all, and doing so now would probably kill as many of their own as it would kill defenders. Nevertheless,
They were already loading the mortars. Gavin had found that lots of men liked to be safe from the fighting, but they wanted to be able to say they'd taken part. Those idiots would fire some rounds and later brag how they'd turned the battle. Good to see that King Hardul's got discipline problems too. And where was the king? From the gate's highest point, looking back into the city, Gavin spied him despite the mists. King Hardul had pressed into the city himself. Idiot. Sure, Gavin had done the same more than once, but he was armed like few others. Gavin's presence on a battlefield wasn't simple morale-boosting. King Hardul was leading the attack, surrounded by perhaps 100 mirror men. As Gavin caught sight of him, he saw the king yelling at some messenger, gesticulating angrily. He wants his drafters. And why isn't he getting them? Gavin moved to the front of the mother's spear, stared out to the hill some 500 paces away. On the crown of the hill, there were banners and a crowd. He drafted lenses, adjusted the distance necessary between the two to get the focus right, and studied the image above the low-hanging mists. A multicolored man was lifting a musket, pointing it right at him. Insanity. No musket could fire so... The musket fired. A huge charge from the cloud of black smoke. Gavin couldn't hear it over the rest of the sounds of battle, of course. One of the mortars fired. Gavin continued to study the man. He drafted the two lenses together to keep the focus steady. A polychrome white. Probably a full polychrome. Or at least pretending to be one, for all the colours he'd drafted into his own body. Curious. The man was studying him, too. Around Lord Omnichrome, there were not just the usual complement of generals and lackeys, but dozens of drafters. They were clearly not going anywhere. Someone handed the musket back to Lord Omnichrome. Lord Omnichrome took the musket, aimed quickly and fired. A second later, something hit the mother's spear 2 paces above Gavin's head and exploded, taking a chunk out of the rock. Luxin projectiles? From 500 paces? Gavin was still thinking about it as the blackguards pulled him away into the back of the spear. Lord Omnichrome wanted King Hardul dead. So simple, so bold. He probably had even egged on King Hardul at Brightwater Wall, daring him to be a Promarchus, getting the young king to lead from the front, hoping he'd get killed. If your enemy wants it, deny it. Gavin drafted a small yellow tablet, making it read, "Capture Hardul, not kill, at all costs." He covered it in blue and liquid yellow luxin and shot it into the path where he believed Corvin was going. But Gavin's intuition told him the main strike was going to happen elsewhere, while the defenders focused their efforts here. "To the Hag's Gate," he told his blackguards. "We run."
Chapter 87.
Caris snatched a second sword from a man lying on the ground, bleeding from a stomach wound. She didn't know what side he was fighting for. She didn't care. The city smelled of gunpowder, sewage, and men's sweat, the kind of stench that gets into leather armor and never comes out. As she ran, she drafted a thin sheen of green luxin down the swords, sealed it, then ran red luxin on top of that, and sealed that, too. This entire area was a tangle of alleys. The buildings were thrown down haphazardly with seeming intent to vex one's neighbours and make straight lines of sight impossible. The good news was that it made it impossible for King Hardul to rally his men in any numbers here. The bad news was that... Oh, shit. Caris rounded a corner and almost ran into 3 mirror men, lost, peering down different alleys and looking like they were about to start arguing which way to go. Caris careened into them before any of them could react. She threw her weight into the smallest one and, catching him flat-footed, managed both to stop herself and to fling him off his feet. She spun, left sword swinging in a red arc. The second merriman was moving his sword into guard position, but too slowly, with no leverage. Her blade beat right through his and cut into his neck above his gorget. Not a deep cut, but deep enough, right there. Red luxin splattered on the outside of his armor, and as she yanked the blade back, red blood splattered the inside to match. He was still standing for the moment, but to Caris, he was already dead. Between colliding with the first mirror man and cutting the second, Caris had lost sight of the last one. She spun around, ducking, blocking with both swords, left down, right up, in a reversed grip. The cut would have beaten right through her weak right-hand guard if she hadn't ducked, too.
Instead, her own blade slapped into her shoulder. She couldn't tell if it cut. What kind of moron went into battle without armor? She came up, cutting, but the mirror man blocked her strike. Then his eyes went wide. A low red flush of light washed them both. His sword had struck sparks off of hers, setting the red lux in a flame, and not only on her sword. Where the two blades had met, his sword had scraped off red lux in two, and the same sparks had set his alight. She'd intended the flames for later, but it worked as well for now. Caris swung her right hand, flaming sword in a quick arc, and stabbed the mirror man in the face with her left. If you're going to wear heavy armor, never open the visor while you're in battle. She kicked him off her blade in a spray of broken teeth and exhaled blood, spun again and saw the mirror man she'd collided with and sent sprawling, crawling for his blade. She stomped on his hand as he lunged for it and punched her blade through the mirror armor. It took a strong, direct strike to push through plate, but she'd practiced it 100 times with the Blackguard, who trained, assuming assassins would bear every advantage, including mirror armor. Pulling the blade free again, she quickly wiped the last of the flaming red luxin off the sword with one of the men's cloaks and reapplied the red luxin. She'd set herself alight if she wasn't careful. She lifted a sturdy bow and a half-empty quiver from one of the dead. Now where the hell was she? And where was Kip? Caris had taken a shortcut, she thought. She knew there was a market on the south side of the city, and she thought she remembered roughly where it was. She'd pointed Kip after King Haridul, hoping he would wreak some havoc by following, which would allow her to circle behind the king and kill him. Maybe it had been a bad choice. Orholm. She'd abandoned Kip. A baby drafter. Not that she could have done much to help him. At the Chromeria, they called what Kip had done going Green Golem. At one time, they had taught it as a war magic. No longer. There were 3 problems with going Green Golem. First, you couldn't seal the green luxin. If you did, you couldn't move. Some drafters got around that by making big, sealed plates and just holding the joints in open green. What Kip was doing was much harder. He was holding all the magic at once. It took enormous focus, and the armor was only as hard as his will. If someone broke his focus, he'd lose his armor instantly. Second, using that much green luxin burned out drafters fast. In the False Prisons War, Caris had heard of green drafters breaking the halo after going Green Golem only 3 or 4 times. Third, you had to be strong as a bull. The suit, the armor, the golem, whatever it was, had weight. For the drafter it was less, because their will took part of the weight, but they still had to move an enormous hunk of luxin. That said, using open green in the legs did mean that a skilled user could make enormous bounds, and once they got moving they were nearly impossible to stop. It all meant that Kip was more likely to get himself killed than anything, and Caris had abandoned him. Damn it! What kind of woman abandons a child? Caris double-checked the position of the sun from the shadows. The sun was still low in the sky, and these alleys were swaddled in shadows and mist. As she looked up, she was struck by it. The rooftops rose from the mists like distant, square mountain peaks, raining over the clouds. Then she saw the retreat flares. It was the color Gavin or the Blackguards were supposed to use, and she was sure that was how he was using them now. But retreat to where? The docks. They knew they were going to lose the city. They were just trying to make King Haridul pay as heavy a price as possible. Caris didn't have much time to make sure that price was the ultimate price. She ran into an empty house. She was pretty sure all the houses were empty here, pushing past the leavings of chickens and several dogs and 1 live, skinny cow. Lots of people brought their animals inside during the night, both for safety and to warm the house. She found the stairs, ran up to the family's quarters, which had been hurriedly emptied, and found the ladder to the roof. The square, squat houses of Garriston all had these flat roofs. The roof became a third room for most families. A perfect place to cool down on the hot, long summer evenings. The commoner's only chance of catching a breeze off the Cerulean Sea. The buildings were packed tight, but by no means uniform. Not every building was 3 stories, and even of the many that were, the stories were different heights. All the same, as Caris reached the roof, for one moment she was struck by the beauty of the scene. The whitewashed roofs, little squares and rectangles gleaming in the sun, with mist curling up around every edge, churches and a few mansions rising like mountains out of the clouds, and a travertine palace dominating everything. Farther south she could just see Brightwater Wall,
like a golden belt around the city. Nearer there was black smoke rising from the city wall, flashes of magic from the gates. She shut it out, found the market she'd been heading for. With the mist, she couldn't see enough to tell if her guess had been correct. You've already bet Kip's life on this course. Might as well see if it pays off. Cursing herself for a fool, Caris drafted a green weapon harness, sheathed both blades on her back, messed with the harness for a second to get it to set right with the quiver and bow, cursed the torn, tight sleeves on her dress, cursed her muscular shoulders, and tore the sleeves off. She breathed. Then she sprinted to the edge of the roof and leapt. The houses here were so close it was an easy jump. Some homes even had planks between them so neighbors could visit each other. So long as she didn't want to cross the street, it was easy going. She ran as fast as she could. One street to clear, then another block of houses, then the market. Her eyes bounced back and forth as she approached the larger gap of crossing the street. There. One of the houses on the other side had a significantly lower roof. Caris veered left and leapt, passing over the heads of 30 or 40 merrymen. She hit the lower roof, rolled, popped to her feet just in time to have to leap again. To a higher roof. She hit the next roof with one foot extended. She pushed up, trying to push herself just a little higher, but not stop her forward momentum. Her body popped up, but not forward enough. She landed with half of her torso on flat, whitewashed stucco, then slid down, scrambling, trying to find purchase. She dropped to her fingertips on dirty, cracked, crumbling stucco. She swung sideways, lost one handhold for a second as the stucco ripped away. She latched her hand back onto the roof, a clean grip this time, and swung back the other way. Her foot reached the edge, tearing the slit of her dress up even higher. She pulled herself up quickly, not trusting that the rest of the stucco wouldn't crumble at any moment. No time to be elated at being alive. Caris checked her swords and bow, glanced once down at the 20-foot drop onto an uneven surface below, a broken leg there if she'd fallen at least. Then she ran again. She reached a roof overlooking the market and stopped. King Haradul was coming, with hundreds of merrymen and a few drafters, and Kip was hot on their heels. Literally. This was going to get messy. Caris smiled. Chapter 88. Kip was on fire. Someone had doused him in red Luxon and lit him up. It didn't stop him. He simply thickened the green that encased him so the red wouldn't burn through. The pyre jelly stuck to the green. He couldn't rub it away from his face. It was glued in place, implacable. But he could move the green Luxon itself. So he made it swirl outward until his eyes were clear and he could see again. Using the same technique, he swirled all of the pyre jelly to his arms and shoulders, then along his sides, so he was outlined in flame. It all took only a few moments. He thought it, and the Luxon did it. Or, more precisely, he willed it, and it happened. The wildness within him was so strong that he wanted to break free of the city and run away. But he wouldn't allow it. He harnessed the wildness. The wildness would serve him. It would help him destroy the man who held the lash and the leash, the man who wanted to control him, King Haradul. He wasn't sure that he was going the right way, but he followed the flow of King Haradul's soldiers. Kip himself was like a beacon, burning as he was in the misty morning. But the light made his vision lousy. It was like holding a torch. If you held it over your head, you might see into the darkness, but if you held it between yourself and the darkness, you weren't going to see anything at all. Kip was the torch. He couldn't see much, and he didn't care. He could see the men streaming away from him, some of them seeing him and just running like hell, but others seemed to be running toward something, a meeting place, a rallying point, where King Haradul would be. Kip barreled around a corner into the backs of half a dozen soldiers. They hadn't seen him, and he couldn't stop. He ran right over them in a mess of screams and burning flesh and curses and blood, and a struggle just to keep from falling as he stepped on body parts. He swung his arms in big sweeping motions, fire and blood and blades unleashed into a crowd. And it was a crowd. Kip had made it. There were hundreds of soldiers here. He could see dim flashes of the winking armor of the mirrormen on the other side of the square. He was subsumed, folded into the loving arms of battle. There was no morning mist, no counting of his foes, no deciphering the shouts of his enemies into plain language, orders that might help him know what was coming.
There was only the roar coming from Kip's own throat, the hammering of his own heart, the pulsing life that was his magic. There was only the burning in his muscles, the resistance his arm felt, as a bladed arm cut into a man's torso, and the freedom as he pulled it all the way through. The world closed in on Kip. He could barely see, barely turn his neck within the green armor. It drove him crazy. He needed freedom. He couldn't be trapped. He was an animal. He crashed through ranks of soldiers as they formed against him. His sweeping arms snapped spears like nothing. He bludgeoned heads with his closed fists, tore men off his back and snapped their spines with his hands. Then, abruptly, the ranks parted in front of him. All except one man, who didn't move aside in time, and Kip saw two rows of 10 musketeers each. The first row was kneeling, the second row standing, all muskets pointed at him. Someone shouted, his voice a command, and Kip saw the one soldier between him and the musketeers. The man heard, too, and understood. Kip saw the panic on his face. The musketeers loosed a volley. Fire and smoke leaped like a pouncing, snarling lion from their muskets. Kip saw the soldier cut down even as he steeled himself against the blast. The musket balls hit him like a fist, many striking at the same time, and a few instants behind the first, carrying him like a punch's follow-through, he was swept off his feet. A cheer went up. Kip's head swam, and he felt the green luxin going soft all around him.
"No, I can take punishment. That's my gift. That's my talent."
A musketeer ran over to Kip, pointed a blunderbuss at his head. Something streaked by the man's head, an arrow, but missed. Kip grabbed the yawning mouth of the blunderbuss and pulled it to himself, stuck it right to his forehead, and pressed green luxin down the barrel. The man pulled the trigger and the breech exploded. Kip jumped to his feet with inhuman strength. He stomped on the screaming musketeer and looked at himself. He could see the lead musket balls flattened inside his green armor, like they'd shot a tree. The bullets had penetrated, but been stopped. Kip laughed, damn near insane. He was bulletproof. Ignoring the musketeers, several of whom were running away while the rest were reloading furiously, fumbling with their ramrods and powder horns, trying to ready another shot, Kip looked for King Kharadul. These men were no threat. They couldn't bind him. But he couldn't see. So he pulled green luxin around him and made himself taller. Simple. And there he was. Surrounded by his mirror men, King Kharadul was mounted, shouting at a drafter beside him, pointing at Kip. The drafter's skin was bright blue, but even as she gathered her magic, something streaked out of the sky. The woman's hands opened limply and blue poured out of her, puddled on the ground. She toppled out of her saddle. King Kharadul stopped in mid-sentence, looked around. The drafter on his other side, a red, fell out of her saddle. This time Kip, and all the mirror men, followed the arrow's path back to its source. Up on a rooftop, Karis, skinny, muscular, bloody, wearing a torn dress and already drawing another arrow. One of the mirror men tackled King Kharadul out of his saddle. Karis's third arrow cracked a mirror man's greave and pinned his leg into his horse. The stallion went crazy, bolting, knocking down half a dozen men and trampling them before it tripped and rolled over on the mirror man. Kip ignored the havoc. He had his target now. He could feel his strength ebbing. He had to do this now. There would be no second chance. He bulled forward, men and women dodging out of his way, slowly reaching full speed. "I'm crazy." Kip laughed. If this was insanity, so be it. He collided with the first ranks of mirror men before they had all recovered from looking for Karis. Some were turned, some were mounted, others had dismounted. Some were still drawing or reloading muskets to fire at the rooftop assassin. Kip bowled over a horse, smashed men, deflected weak strikes. Swinging one big luxin fist, he crushed a mirror man's helmet, but the blow also sheared off half of Kip's green hand. Elsewhere, he saw that the spikes and blades he'd drafted onto his body had been cut or broken off where it collided with mirror armor. He smashed left and right, but even as he crushed men, his armor was disintegrating. He was hacking parts of himself off with every blow he inflicted. The mirror men, recovering, formed up behind the front row. Kip burst through the row and found himself staring at dozens of pistols, all roaring. It knocked him back once more, even though he braced himself. He felt hot lines against his skin. The Luxon was thinner now. Some of the shots must have gotten through.
I will not fail. Not now, not so close. Damn it, where's the king?
Kip lashed out at the nearest Mirrorman, shooting a ball of green Luxon at the man. It hit the Mirrorman's chest and split in half, gobs of green Luxon flying off in either direction, leaving no more damage than if Kip had thumped the man's chest lightly with his fist, scored only because a musket ball had been carried unintentionally inside the green Luxon Kip had thrown. The rest of the Mirrormen dropped their muskets and drew sharp, mirror-bright swords as one. Kip was looking at his chest, studded with those flattened musket balls suspended in green Luxon, some of them surrounded by blood where they had cut him. He was drawing in more Luxon to replenish his armor, and he saw the little balls swirling around like little boats under a waterfall. Luxon doesn't hurt. How about lead? Kip drew one of the lead balls up from his chest into his hand. He extended his hand and shot out a tiny ball of green Luxon, carrying the musket ball with all his will. A little hole, lined in green goo, appeared in one of the mirror men's chest plates. His mirror armor cracked in splintery, spidery lines around the hole, and then crimson blood joined the emerald Luxon, and he toppled backward. It was like Orholm had breathed new life into Kip. He was exhausted, broken, elated, and free. He was laughing again. Totally insane. Totally unstoppable.
Lead bullets swirled through his armor and into his palms, and he fired them like he was a musket himself.
The weight of green armor, which had been so crippling before, now allowed him to shoot the little bullets so hard that if he had been doing it without the armor, it would have bowled him over. He extended right hand, left hand, right hand, left, shooting everywhere. At each place, men died. Kip wasn't accurate in the least, but this close, he didn't need accuracy. He pointed at a chest and might hit a neck or a belly or someone else in the second rank. Either way, it killed and ranks disappeared before him. He emptied all the musket balls from his chest and found more in his back and arms, and new ones added every moment. He cut a gory path through the Mirrormen. He couldn't see King Haradul, but he figured that wherever the resistance was greatest was probably the right way. Nothing good is easy. Through the ranks and chaos, Kip saw a flash of something. Royal garments. Haradul. He burst through just as King Haradul was pulled up onto a platform at the back of the market square. His men were trying to hustle him down some narrow alley there. Kip bounded forward and found that his green Luxon legs bounced him much farther than he'd intended. He landed between King Haradul and the alley, crushing two of the king's men, including his last drafter. The ground was littered with dead drafters, but Kip didn't care how they died. He had eyes only for the king. He extended a hand behind him and shot out a dozen musket balls toward the remaining Mirrormen. King Haradul tripped over a body on the platform. In an instant, Kip was on top of him. He kicked at Kip. Kip brought a big fist down and broke the king's leg like kindling. The man screamed. Kip grabbed his head, latching big Luxon fists together on either side and lifting. The rattle of musket fire stopped. Kip was too close to the king. No one would dare.
"You killed my mother!"
Kip shouted in the king's face. The king's eyes focused on Kip's face within the green armor.
"You," he said, "Lena's brat. She's not worthy of vengeance, and you know it."
"Kip!"
someone was shouting, but Kip barely heard it. The king was trying to draw a bichoir from his belt, but he was in too much pain.
"Go to hell!" Kip screamed. "You go to hell!"
He lifted the king high and squeezed with all his strength and all his will.
"Kip, stop! This is just what Lord Omnicrom wants!"
Nothing could penetrate the madness, the sheer fury. Kip wasn't even sure whether it was more at this man for massacring his village or at his mother. He loved her. He hated her. King Haradul screamed, and Kip screamed, and together they drowned out Corvin Danavis's scream. Kip's hands clapped together, and the king's head popped like a grape, like a watermelon dropped from a great height, splattering juice all over.
"Kip, no! It's just what they want you to do!"
Corvin Danavis's voice penetrated Kip's iron skull as he dropped the king's limp corpse onto the platform.
Looking up, stunned, Kip saw Corvin Danavis mounted at the head of perhaps 100 men riding into the square. The invaders already broken and leaderless, without King Khardul, scattered at the sight of so many fresh soldiers. Kip heard a body fall behind him, and turned to see a mirror man with an arrow in his heart. Someone had saved him. Again. He hadn't even seen the man. His brain was swimming. He felt like he was shrinking. He was standing on his own feet again. The green Luxin was gone. He tottered and felt someone steady him on his feet. He turned. Karis had come down from the roofs and was taking the beach coif from the king's body. Karis? He'd meant to save her, hadn't he? That turned out well. He looked at King Hardul's body and felt nothing but emptiness. When he looked up, Corvin Danavis was there, swearing. Kip had never heard Master Danavis swear.
"Do you have any idea what you've just done?"
Corvin asked. "Go to hell," Kip said, empty, dry, lifeless. "He killed our whole town. He deserved worse." Corvin stopped and looked at Kip with a new respect in his eyes. He didn't say anything for a moment, then said,
"Mount up. We have to get out of the city. Now."
"But I killed him. Don't we win?"
Kip asked. His head felt so thick and fuzzy, and the light was hurting his eyes. He wanted nothing so much as a blanket and a dark room. They had won, hadn't they?
"Why do we have to go?"
"Look at that," Karis said, coming close. She was already mounted. She was pointing toward the wall. Lord Omnichrome stood on top of the Mother's Gate, perhaps 400 paces distant, and when he spoke, through some trick of magic, they could hear him perfectly.
"They've killed King Haradol. Avenge the king! Drive out the foreigners!"
The gate opened, revealing hundreds of drafters. Hundreds, and dozens of color whites. They were followed by thousands more soldiers.
"That's why," Karis said.
Chapter 89.
Gavin's intuition was wrong. On arriving at the Hag's Gate, he'd become like a man trying to plug a leaky hull with his fingers and toes. He could only reach so far. He and the Blackguard had held the Hag's Gate alone with no other support against thousands of soldiers for 10 minutes now. At this point he could hold it by simply standing here behind the bullet shield his Blackguards had drafted in front of him. They weren't fighting him. Everywhere he went, the army facing him withdrew. If the city had only one gate, that might have been helpful. But with three gates and a crumbling three-quarters circle for a wall, it was hopeless. No one would face him. They simply sent men around the sides and waited. If he held these men up for long, the armies would simply enter through the other gates. By this time, surely all the gates had fallen. So his enemy was canny. He wasn't wasting his men throwing them against Gavin. Time would deliver the victory into his hands, so he was preserving his strength. No need to rush the victory. Send the men around Gavin and advance everywhere but where Gavin was. Then Gavin would either be rendered totally ineffectual, dashing from one place to another, fighting men who melted away, or he would become separated from the main body of his army, at which point Lord Omnichrome would throw away as many lives as he needed to kill him. Or capture him. The campaigner in Gavin was furious. During the war he would have gone for the throat. They wanted to melt in front of him. He would have gone for the king and killed him and let the chips fall where they may. Doing such a thing would put him in the most peril possible, but he wouldn't have cared. Which is why fortune favors the young. He snorted. If he got killed, the refugees wouldn't make it 2 leagues out of the harbor. Cursing, Gavin drafted the retreat flares and shot them high into the sky. "Any news from the docks?" he asked.
"No, sir."
Gavin hadn't expected any messengers to be able to find him, but it still would have been nice. "Let's go." A red Blackguard laid down a thick carpet of red Luxin across the broken opening of the gate and set fire to it, as Gavin turned and started jogging. They'd lost their horses earlier and hadn't grabbed any replacements. Horses that weren't trained to musket fire and magic were often as dangerous to their riders as they were useful. Being mounted also made you a nicer target for muskets and drafters. The city wasn't that big. They'd run. Odd, running through an empty city. Almost everyone was simply gone. And there wasn't yet that air of abandonment and layer of dust that settled over cities soon after their inhabitants had left. Garriston was the kind of empty that happened when people left food burning on the fire and simply ran. The burnt smell hadn't even dissipated yet. In fact, they were lucky no one had burned the city down. Empty alleys. Empty homes. Little potted flowers abandoned in windowsills and not yet withered. Death will come for you too, little flower. They made it to one of the bridges when the ambush was sprung. 2 dozen drafters and several color whites popped up from the roofs and began hurling magic. No hesitation, no warning. Of course. They'd circled Gavin to cut off the most obvious route out. The flat roofs gave them an excellent platform from which to attack, and the open area of the bridge made a perfect killing field. But the blackguards were blackguards. Every one of them knew his task and how the tasks would shift depending on which of them were killed. They practiced for this. This is what they were. Shields of green Luxon, blue Luxon, and more green Luxon, 3 layers thick, enfolded Gavin. He knew exactly where they would land, and each shield had holes in it, so that he could fight too. He stuck a hand outside of his shield and pointed at every one of the attackers he could see. He shot narrow tendrils of superviolet Luxon at them, sticking it to each drafter, leaving dangling ropes of superviolet. 2 of the blackguards were superviolet blue, bichromes. Their first action was to shield Gavin, 2nd to shield themselves, and 3rd, if possible, this. They could see Gavin's superviolet threads, and they drafted blue along those shining paths as they pulled grenades from their bandoliers. They hurled the grenades, which followed the arcing superviolet tracks unerringly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They had even bolstered the arcs of Luxon so they followed a natural throwing path. But the ambushes were moving, too. 3 blackguards went down in the first wave of fire missiles. In defending Gavin first, they couldn't fix their own shields in time. A gout of red Luxon jetted in from 4 sides, trying to drench the entire bridge so they could set it alight. Blue and green blackguards threw up shields to divert the flows off the side of the bridge, while a yellow threw light burst grenades at everyone she could see. Gavin looked forward and saw that the ambushes weren't blocking the way across the bridge. There was only one reason for that. They wanted Gavin and the blackguard to flee headlong into something worse. Projectiles were sparking and whining off his shields, grenades explosions were rocking the rooftops, and huge blue knives like icicles were being fired by 2 of the color whites behind them. The blackguards were compressed tight around Gavin, using their shields and, if that failed, their bodies to keep him safe. "Let's move! Cross the bridge!" the commander said. She was young. Or Hollum, had they lost so many that this young woman was in charge? All this was according to the blackguard training, too. Protect, secure, decide, act. No hesitation. "No," Gavin shouted. He pointed off the side of the bridge and drafted a new walkway in green from the middle span to a point 30 paces down. "Flash!" one of the blackguards yelled. She was a yellow. She launched a flash bomb a mere 10 paces into the air. Gavin and the blackguards covered their faces as it exploded with so much force that Gavin could feel it rock his shields. Then they ran across the new green bridge, even as the bridge behind them, no longer protected from the red Luxon streams, went up in flame. One of the blue whites dropped into the street in front of them as they made it back to land, determined to steer them back into the secondary ambush. 12 blackguard hands went up, and the beast was riddled with Luxon bullets and cudgeled aside instantly. A blackguard fell, though Gavin hadn't seen what cut him down.
"No, no, no!"
the man was yelling. His partner split away from them. The blackguard who had fallen rolled over onto his back. His partner, a woman near 40, Leia, Gavin thought her name was, stood over him.
"I'm sorry," the fallen blackguard said. "Too much! Too much!"
Leia pulled an eyelid up to get a good look at the fallen blackguard's halo. She whispered something, kissed her fingers, touched them to the fallen man's eyes, mouth, and heart. Then she cut his throat. The rest of the blackguards didn't wait. They ran past an alley and found themselves looking at the backs of dozens of musketeers, all in formation, muskets up, pointed the other way where the ambush had originally tried to steer Gavin. The men were so intent on waiting for their quarry to appear in front of them that they didn't see Gavin behind them. As they ran past, Leia slopped red Luxon over them, a lot of red. The whoosh of flame was so intense as she set it alight that Gavin saw shadows half a block away, which meant the flames had leapt for a moment above the rooftops. The screams followed, men burning to death. One more river crossing. This time Gavin led the blackguards to a blank section and drafted his own green span across. No need to risk another ambush. They made it to the docks and found hundreds of soldiers there, muskets loaded, facing out. The boats were still being boarded, mountains of luggage pushed aside, left behind, now gathered for use as barriers. There was a stream of boats already heading out, a line disappearing into the distance, going through the guardian's legs as she stood guard. Every ship in the entire harbour had been used, and most were already gone. Two huge barges crafted of blue and green Luxin and wood had been constructed, and were already heading out too. That left one Luxin barge that was rapidly filling even now, with far too many men to fit in it. The soldiers here were locals, mostly. Where the hell had all the Hrothgari soldiers gone? Boarded earlier ships, no doubt. Someone would pay for that. But not now. The soldiers who remained looked resolute, and their countenances lifted as they saw Gavin. These were men who thought they were going to die to give their families a chance to get away. Men who were willing to pay that price. "Who's in charge?" Gavin asked.
"I am, sir. Lord Prism, sir."
A mousy Hrothgari, with oddly kinky hair for his pale complexion, and a look in his eyes like he was scared to death, stepped forward. In another time, Gavin would have laughed to see the awkward little man.
"We've got almost all the ships we have loaded. Men gathered..."